Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Very interested to hear that on the recording side.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that works.
Because it's a recording of a recording of a recording. Mm.
Sort of. They're really high res, though. But yeah, we'll see how this goes. Because it's going straight from my tablet into my mixer before it goes
live
out. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If worst comes to worst, if you on the other end hear a very sharp, high quality version of it, he probably replaced it.
Yep.
Probably.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
But we'll see how this works.
Right.
No. But yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Battery time.
How have you guys been this week?
Busy. Busy, busy.
I know. It's that time of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I came down with the creeping crud. Yay! I'm patient zero. I'm patient zero. I will hug you.
I'm vaccinated. I'm okay. My herd immunity will win out.
Sure.
I'm a little too off to actually do a witty comeback for that, and it's a science setup. Oh my god! Yeah, I'm jacked.
Fair enough.
Come on, when have you ever seen me turn down a science, you know, comeback?
Never.
That's exactly. True.
Never. So, yeah, it's been crazy. I was supposed to run something this week, and I only have three players right now, and so I had one of my guys, like, last minute on Saturday, is like, I've got a stomach bug, and my wife has it, and I'm not going to subject all of you guys to whatever I have. And we were all like, oh, thank God.
See, this is why online virtual tabletops are nice and safe. Your co-players cannot make you sick.
True. But I have all the cool props and minis.
You get a camera.
No, it's not the same. It is not the same.
What if down the line, HoloLens stuff gets like really cheap, so they just gotta set up a table and then like your table appears in front of them, and you're all like, you know, holographically there?
Okay, the only way that will work is if they can actually make that happen, and I don't see it being a likely situation. So
I don't know. We'll see how it is in 5 years.
We'll see. We will see. I am not holding my breath, but you never know.
5 years is a long time to hold your breath.
I know.
I'm
not doing it. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture.
Wow. Wow, talk about timely references. Did you dust that one off first?
Yeah. Well, I felt the need to. I did feel the need to. But, yeah, this has been really a crazy, busy week, and I've been actually kind of glad that we got a chance to sit down and do this again, because I've been actually really jonesing with everything else that we've been doing podcast-wise, so... yeah, I'm a glutton for punishment for those of you that are not paying attention to the feed and seeing these weird stories that I'm putting out. Yeah. That whole craziness that is the 12 days of podcasting that we talked about last week. But yeah.
Did we talk about that last week?
We said that we were doing it, but that was about the extent of what we said about it.
I need to change my closing remarks.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that I know we said something about it, and yeah, it's... I decided to do something a little different, because I'm always telling people, read books, read books, read books. So now I'm reading stories to people, or poems, or whatever.
Fair enough.
So
it was weird, though, your first... The Bells?
Yeah.
it was... No, here's the thing. I come from a musical background. And it was very, very interesting having it read almost seemingly out of rhythm. But with unique inflections in the voice, adding almost a strange melodic tone to it. So I was just like, ooh. And then I'm like, oh, God, my classical music training will never, ever let me go.
No, it won't. It won't. And I am about the worst person ever to do that. Like, when I first did it, it was really funny. I did the first story, which is Azathoth. And I read it. I did the normal little intro piece where I talk about, you know, this is Azathoth by, you know, H.P. Lovecraft. It was published this year, you know, whatever year it was. And then I read the story, or the, like, essay, kind of. And then, at the end of it, I just said, okay, see you guys next time, and just cut it there. And mm-hmm. My wife was like, no, that's horrible, and you need to tell people what the hell they just listened to again. And so, when I did the second one, I did that, and then I went back and changed the first one so that it had it in there. So,
still real nice. It was. I'll be honest. Having you read that is a treat. I am enjoying it. It's interesting, you know.
Well, pretty cool. That's kind of the point. I wanted to do something that was different, and I didn't want to do like a world building thing because. That takes a lot of work. So I figured this is something that's... It's all public domain stuff. So it's all free to record like that. And I'm not making any money off of it, so what do they care? Yeah. So yeah, anybody that's a patron, you will not be charged for those 12... that
thingies.
Are stories. Those are just freebies for everybody to enjoy.
A little something extra.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Well, we don't really have a nice, clean segue here, so.
Well, you were talking about stories, some of them with a kind of a fantasy edge.
Yeah.
So, that ties into our main topic, which is...
Fantasy settings.
See, we'll
I can hammer in a segue.
Like, I'll be honest, that was forced as hell. That was forced as hell.
Look.
But we'll take it.
Square peg, polyhedral hole.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, sledgehammer will put anything through almost anything. So, yeah, go for it.
Yep. All right. So, here we go. Fantasy settings, folks. All right.
Anything set before the 1920s. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
No. This is further than that.
Well, we'll get to the time part in a bit.
Yeah.
The basics.
Yeah. The most basic thing, the biggest element of fantasy, boy, classical fantasy. Because there's a difference. Because there are things that are like modern fantasies.
There's fantasy, there's high fantasy, there's, you know, it's fantasy by environment, there's a fantasy by creature, you know, what's popular, you know, what kind of things are in there. You know, it's, and it's kind of, in a very way, if you think about it, it's kind of hard to pin down what turns something into a fantasy novel.
What does turns it reference King Arthur at all?
Oh, yeah. If it does, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
But what turns something into a fantasy novel, a fantasy game, or, you know, it's like if you're playing like a video game, say you're playing Final Fantasy, it's just like, you know, chocobos are pretty much always going to be in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, you know, when you take a step back and look at it, it's like, well, what makes fantasy fantasy? Does fantasy have to have magic, or does it just have to be the fantastic?
I think it has to be the fantastic is where I would go.
Yeah.
Whether that be magic or legends or a strange world that's not physically possible. Things that defy the natural order of the world as we know it in the real world, so to speak.
Yeah. Because some of the most classic fantasy stuff, generally speaking, has elements of heroes, the fantastic, and magic.
Myth and legend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A fantasy is really steeped so much in that myth and legend.
Because just because you have knights and horses and castles doesn't automatically make it fantasy. That could just be historical.
Right.
It takes a little something more.
Or in a series of novels I'm reading, actually, it could be, well, it's part fantasy, part sci-fi. Actually, it's more cyberpunk modern, and it's really whacked out. But, you know, if it feels like a fairy tale, you know, that you would tell your kid, or it you know, follows like the hero's journey, or, you know, in the kind of
literal sense.
Well, yeah, that too. But the other thing is, it's fantasy. It almost feels so far removed from a world that we know, because the universe usually have that kind of fantasy. It's something we could. Usually, you don't see a lot of dystopian fantasies. Usually, they're kind of almost utopic, but I know that's not a word. But
I can actually think of a story that I have read. It's a two-part story, two huge novels that are dystopic fantasies.
Well, I would actually mark.
I'm talking about old school.
I would say that most fantasy stories are dystopic. They're not apocalyptic. But many are dystopic.
Have nots.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah, I'm thinking more like,
That's the defining point of dystopic is the.
Yeah, you were right. I mixed up dystopic versus apocalyptic.
Right.
Thank you. I guess I was like, tell with this. I'm wrong. But yeah, it's
cyberpunk set in just fantasy, just use magic as the technology source, but set it up as corporations.
Yeah. Kingdoms as corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh God, it's like Melf's acid, everything.
But see, that's the beauty. Like we're saying, I mean, fantasy is a setting. It's not a genre. It is as well, but it is way more of a setting element.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the interesting things about it is it kind of straddles that place between setting and genre.
Mm-hmm.
Very well. Especially for gaming. In novels and stuff, fantasy is really, only a genre. It's not as much a setting. Because you have worlds that are settings.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why. But if you're, that's literature as opposed to gaming. Gaming, it actually does find a way to straddle the two, setting and genre.
Mm-hmm. Well, not to mention,
they kind of do, but.
But not to mention, I also want to touch on something Jules mentioned earlier of when we were talking very briefly about science fiction a little bit there. You also can get a lot of genres in fantasy that, you know, go very buddy-buddy of science fiction, the so-called science fantasy settings. Things like Star Wars is very much science fiction, but it's also...
Hello, the Force!
Very much fantasy. So...
The Force. And if anyone brings up midichlorians, I will hunt you down. They don't exist.
I don't know what that word is. You just said midichlorians?
Yeah, I've heard rumors of people thinking that is canon.
Mitochondria
exist.
But that's more science than science fiction.
Oh, right. Yeah. and that is one of the things. Like, fantasy doesn't... It can stretch across many, many things. And that's actually one of the more interesting elements of it.
I think that's why also a lot of games that you see out there have a good... You know, even in certain, like, modern settings or what have you, they have a, if they're not fantasy based, they'll take a lot of the fantasy elements, because fantasy is also so mutable and it seeps everywhere, you know. So it's, you know, it's like you might
myth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and they stretch across so many areas.
This is also what you see with a lot of homebrew worlds, and, you know, a lot of the homebrew settings, it's a fantasy, because when people make rules for a fantasy game, fantasy being itself so mutable, you know,
yeah,
it's easy to slot your own world into it.
Yeah, which is why I do a lot of my own world building, and I've always felt that published stuff is a great minefield, that you can have some great little bits and pieces, but then you can also have things that will blow your worlds apart.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it's the adaptability of a fantasy setting to pretty much whatever you'd like it to be is great, but it does carry its own risks, I guess.
Yeah.
My biggest beef, I'd say, I have with fantasy is often it is inconsistent. The nature of much of what fantasy settings have is that they tend to be more to the beck and call of the narrative of the game, story, or literature piece, that sometimes they'll throw away things that were this rule before in favor of this new mechanic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, trying to think. Huh. And I almost had a thought, and then all of a sudden it just kind of on the wind. Hate it when that happens.
Yeah, but Psionicist. What are you going to do?
Yeah, the thing is, also, I guess, the one thing is, like, also, fantasy for a lot of people is the gateway into gaming. You know, it's D&D is a fantasy setting. D&D is just a fantasy, you know, and it's the most prolific. But, you know, like, we all grew up watching cartoons. We all grew up, well, most of us, you know, we grew up hearing fairy tales, you know, as bedtime stories. So, you know, since it's such a part of our you know, almost the shared meme, all of us when we're growing up, it's easy to imagine yourself in a fantasy setting. You know, we know the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We all know Cinderella. We all know, well, most of us, you know, usually, you know, like the monsters of fairy tales, like the big bad wolf, or, you know, the wicked stepmother. And so we're used to having there is a, quote, big bad. So, you know, we've had that. We've been growing up since we were young. I mean, think of some of the cartoons you were watching. You know, I'm not talking like the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, though. That's a little too obvious.
But I did watch that one.
I did too. But, you know, there was, Mighty Max, very much a lot, you know, it was a little weird, but there was, the fantasy setting in there. You know, if you start thinking about the cartoons, you know, at least the non-Hanna-Barbera ones, you know, some of them...
Why would you not include one of those? There's a great one in there that's totally fantasy.
Because a lot, I Dream of Jeannie, of course, a little bit. But no, right now, a lot of them, it's hard to watch them unless you've got Boomerang.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, a lot of the stuff that I watched, you know, they didn't run the cartoons anymore. But there was, oh God, what was it? Hell, the Smurfs. Fantasy.
Yeah. I was thinking, there is a Hanna-Barbera cartoon it's fantasy-esque. It's much more... Oh, God, what would be the best term for it? It's post-apocalyptic fantasy. So think like Chronicles of Shannara. And that was Thundar the Barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen an episode of that.
Leaping Glorp.
Yeah.
Reason being is I did not have cable. Into the 90s.
I didn't watch it until probably the late 90s on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, but we didn't get we didn't get Cartoon Network. That I didn't start watching Cartoon Network until 2000s, and even then we didn't have Boomerang. So what I got to see was Saturday morning races where they cut up a lot of those. You know, not Yogi Bear or something like that, but they cut up a lot of the other earlier ones. And I got a chance to see them.
Yeah.
You know, Saturday morning cartoons, when I was allowed to watch them, did not include Thundar the Barbarian.
Oh my goodness.
But, you know, there was... I remember the Smurfs. I don't know why I remember that one so vividly.
Because it was very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another great fantasy one that was a cartoon as well was Darkwater.
Pirates of Darkwater. Yeah, I remember that one.
So
I don't.
If we're that one wasn't that popular.
Yeah.
I remember being on a season or two, I think, and that was about it. Now, if we're going to keep it, now I'm going to throw back to my fantasy meets science again and throw in another one of my favorite cartoons that's fantasy, Gargoyles.
Yeah.
Steeped heavily in fantasy, science takes advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. That's where you got Coldstone and some of the other characters in there.
Well, you're using science to cheat a magical curse.
Exactly.
You know, it's you're cursed.
And the castle rises above the
clouds.
And the castle rises above the clouds.
All right, guys, we're going to bring this castle up with helicopters and cranes and literally put the castle in the sky.
Yeah.
Guys, it worked. Okay.
Yep. And that's totally fine. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are all elements of fantasy. I mean, they help define how best to use the system as it exists. Now we've kind of been talking about fantasy. Now, what games?
Aside from the obvious D&D, right?
Aside from the obvious of D&D and Pathfinder, because they're both...
Yeah. Don't say that too much. Wizard might get a little broken up about it.
We call them kind of like fraternal twins. You know.
They are. Pathfinder is D&D 3.75.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Just leave it as that's it's a derivative of 3.5, and it is its own thing. For a very long period of time during 4th edition, during 4th edition, it was the biggest selling game in the world.
Too bad, because D&D 4th edition was good.
Well, that was the thing. So, what other games, aside from the two big, you know, gorillas in the room, what other games fall into the fantasy setting?
Legend of the Five Rings.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
They're taking, you know, the period of samurais and stuff from feudal Japan, made up their own world of Rokugan, and then threw gods into it, and the Shadowlands, and corruption, and all that other stuff. You know, where magic is magic, and, you know, I love reading the fiction, won't play it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, I came up with you, go on.
Me? Burning Wheel.
Yeah, Burning Wheel.
You were talking about a distant cousin of D&D.
Yeah.
Burning Wheel is the... I want to play a fantasy setting, but I want to deal with the harsh combat rules of World of Darkness and being able to manipulate the reality of the system the whole time I'm playing.
Yeah. It's holy crap. Is it impressive?
It's a great system. It is not where you want any newbie to start with a role-playing system.
But there is one that is tied to that very loosely. That is.
Does it involve small furry creatures?
It does!
Mm-hmm. Come on, don't leave us in suspense.
Mouse Guard, based off of the comic series, It uses a slimmed-down version of the Burning Wheel rule set.
Little tiny mice with swords and armor.
Think and Red Ball. Except there's mice and everything else is an animal. Like, everything else has an animal intelligence, but mice... And I think there was one other species of animal that was in there. But those were the only two that were sentient, and everything else were just animals. And it is totally a fantasy setting. Crazy fantasy stuff. And it's based on the Burning Wheel rule set.
And there's an actual kind of a best way to put it, out of the box one, very, very recent, is the Dragon Age RPG.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Has pretty good quick start rules too, if you want a freebie try it out.
Oh yeah, that's the one thing. It is really easy to play, and it's also set out to be really easy to run. If you're a newbie, it's okay.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it.
Now I'm going to drop my favorite fantasy setting, my favorite fantasy game in here, because I can talk about this game for weeks.
Please don't. We need to go to the bathroom sometimes.
It is Immortal. The Invisible War. Anytime I can drop that one, I will drop it, because it is such an amazing game. But yeah, it is fantasy. It is a modern day fantasy game.
Legit.
Nice. Very nice.
And then there's, of course, Scion, which is myths. You're the children of gods. I mean, you don't get much more fantasy than that.
We are tapping a little bit into our modern things there, but of course, we also could talk about World of Darkness a little bit there, too.
Yeah, because they all have elements of that fantastical. Yeah. Fantasy is able to do some really amazing things. And we, as with the previous one, and with science fiction when we do it next, you will see that these are just beginning to scratch the surface, because there's so much that you can talk about with any of these settings. And so I think that's kind of where we're gonna call this one wrapped up. And we're going to move on to the next thing, which is...
And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
Hooray!
Those big heavy blocks.
I know.
Oh yeah.
Alright, so girls, we know that you have been sick.
Yeah, sorry guys, I tapped. I will have something nice for you next week.
Okay, then I bet... No, I'm not going to do it to you. It's Christmas season. No. I'm not going to make you...
I already got too many other things.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm gonna tell you what I did, and then you will have to download the PDF after the fact. What I drew three maps. I drew, two of them were like underground vignette encounter areas, and then the third one was sort of a courtyard-esque, like just kind of rough layout of where things would be. So,
you know,
there are maps that you can use, because maps are always useful. So,
oh yeah.
I cheat. I drew something.
Well, yeah, but you got somebody like me that's like, I do like a stick figure and somebody's like, oh, did your ink spill out of your pen?
Wow, yeah, harsh.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's, some people say, it's like, oh, I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket with both hands. I am the drawing equivalent of that. I can carry a tune, musician, but... No, I couldn't draw a stick figure if my life depended on it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you just gave me an idea for a stat block.
You're welcome.
Bucket of sound.
Ooh.
Able to scoop up any sound, set it to it, and be poured out and replay the sound.
Okay. That needs to be a magical item.
No, of course.
No. Well, speaking of weird... items that you draw inspiration from, Dust, what did you come up with?
So, there have been some complaints about the length of some of mine, so this week I've decided to go for a little bit of a shorter one.
And so, I wasn't complaining, damn it.
I present the first entry in what I'm calling the catalog. A cryptic folded over piece of paper reveals a page from the notorious catalog. On it, you find the listing for the Doom Tent. The apocalypse is typically seen as a once-in-a-lifetime event, mostly because people don't survive their first go-around. But not anymore, because the party is now outfitted with their own Doom Tent. This sleek ash-gray tent pleasantly houses 6 to 8 individuals with enough food, sundries, breathable air, and potable water to survive in the wilderness for 3 to 4 weeks. Rainproof, fire-retardant, and wind-resistant, the Doom Tent is the ideal camping tool. But, these pleasant features aside, the tent has the unique property of also being apocalypse-avoidant. If properly set up, a process taking 2d12 rounds and requiring moderate strength and intelligence checks, plus 8 if you kept the manual, prior to the apocalyptic event, the tent will be immune from the outcome of any local or global catastrophic event. Occupants will not contract horrible radiation damage, zombie infestations, or anti-rapture-style activities. Even if the entire planet is atomized, the Doom Tent will still stay in one piece, as will the surrounding 30 feet radius of earth, rock, or other material it was pitched on. The tent itself provides a double-flap airlock-like system for exiting and entering the tent, thus ensuring a detoxification or atmosphere returning effect for those coming and going. The Doom Tent cannot guarantee survival for those who step away from the tent, and the tent does not protect against moderate-level dangerous events. Low-level dangers are only afforded a moderate-level protection, no more effective than heavy burlap. The Doom Tent, it's all or nothing. Order of caution, all purchase recorded, and authorities will be notified.
That is brilliant.
Delicious, sir.
Expect delicious. More entries from the catalog to come.
That is great. I love it.
Yeah. Trey sweet, sir.
Thank you. All right. Wow, we're just chugging right along. Ready for this, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
All right. So, I got one for us.
What you got?
Eclat.
Eclat?
Yeah.
Same to you, buddy.
Is that like a chocolate eclair or something?
Sort of similar. It's from the same language group. I'll give you that one.
So it's not like a phyllo pastry filled with chocolate Bavarian cream instead.
No, but it is a noun, so it is a that. Then you got that going for you. Now, since obviously nobody knew the definition, I will just go ahead and drop it right out here. The first definition is an ostentatious display. Or it could be a dazzling effect. And the third definition is a brilliant or conspicuous success.
So an eclair can be éclat.
Yes, it can.
Nice.
Now, to use it in a sentence, the bard was received with great éclat.
Mm.
The origin and etymology is it is a French word which means splinter or burst. In other words, it's literally éclat. They didn't even change it. They just ported it right into English. Because that is how English acquires so many words, and it's...
Yes, it mugs them and ties them up in the middle of the night and kidnaps them kicking and screaming.
Yeah, pretty much. And this word was first used in 1672.
Neato.
Yeah. Apparently, the original meaning for éclat was... Oh, God. I can't remember what it was right this second. It was basically like... It was like a splinter of, like... It was, the expression was something along the lines of, it splintered into a million pieces, is what an éclat was. And somehow it became this weird, like, ostentatious, you know, dazzling display and success. It was really weird, the way it kind of morphed as time went on. So... But there it is. Woohoo!
Very nice.
And it's fun like to it. Pronounce.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the words that it's kind of fun. It feels good to kind of bring that word out. And you're, it's fun to say, it sounds so fancy.
Yes. Yes, it does. And it's good. It's one of the bottom 40% of the words used, but hey, there you go. So, I think that this kind of wraps us up, guys. We just, like, barreled through this.
Yeah, we did.
So, yeah. All right, guys. Let's go ahead and get some closing remarks and shout-outs. Jules, go.
All right, I said because I've been sick. I actually found something kind of interesting. It's called Google Feud. We've all played Family Feud or we've watched it or something like that. And it's pretty much, it's the, you know, when you start typing something in Google and it auto-completes and you get a choice from it. So, yeah. And it's culture, people, names, and questions, and it auto-completes. So, you know, because we were doing the modern setting last week and I was thinking, well, where... If you wanted to get some just random, goofy ideas. One, it's it's fun, you know, because, you know, say I typed in one thing. It's like the most dangerous thing in the world is, and, you know, I type in velociraptors and it doesn't come up, but bears do. So it gives you kind of like a snapshot of the of what the current modern is, if you want to do like a really, really current modern world. But it's just, it's a nice little time-wasty kind of a game that you can use. And, you know, it's weird because you'll get, sometimes you'll get a question. It's like, ooh, that's an interesting thing. And you see what the populace thinks kind of like in the autocomplete.
Yeah.
And it allows you to add a little bit more to your modern world. Yeah, I know we're doing fantasy, but last game was modern, so.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Meat.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, you guys next.
I'm going to cheat. We talked about it in the show, and my pick is Thundar the Barbarian.
Are you kidding me?
Amazon. No, I found it on Amazon. You can get the entire season for like $22.
Dude.
The entire run of this show. Yep.
That's not fair. I can't pick Gargoyles for mine because there's no DVDs of the entire show.
No, it's all out.
Is it? I thought they didn't have the last season.
Yes, they did. I own it.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm not going to do the two, though. You did that already, Derek.
Yeah, well, I cheat. But actually, yeah, no, it's... I'm certain it's horribly dated. And it plays on a lot of the tropes of the 80s TV shows. So, especially cartoons of the time. And it's a Hanna-Barbera show.
You're going to recognize the animation style then.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, it's great. It's fun. It also reminds me a lot of, what was it? Galtar. And it
goes, oh, yeah.
No, it's just
a weird horse.
I'm just appreciating the similarities in the naming structure of these characters.
It's
It's noticing a similarity in these themes.
Oh, yeah. They're great. But, yeah. Enjoy it if you can find it. So, nice. There will be a link in the show notes to where you can get it on Amazon. So,
since my original closing remark, as we said in the intro, was a little roughshod over because I forgot we talked about it already, I'm going to go with a quote from something that kind of ties into why we have fantasy as kind of a foundation to a lot of things. The quote comes from Terry Pratchett's Hogfather.
Woohoo!
All right, said Susan. I'm not stupid. You're saying humans need fantasies to make life bearable. Really? As if it's some kind of pink pill? No. Humans need fantasy to be human, to be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape. Tooth fairies, hog fathers, little, yes, as practice. You have to start out learning to believe the little lies. So we can believe the big ones? Yes. Justice, mercy, duty, that sort of thing. They're not the same at all. You'd think so? Then take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder and sieve it through the finest sieve, and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy, and yet, death waved a hand, and yet you act as if there is some ideal order in the world, as if there is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged. Yes, but people have got to believe that. Or what's the point? My point, exactly.
Nice.
Well done. Good quote, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great book, and it's also a wonderful holiday show to, you know, watch with family and friends. I highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Very appropriate for this time of year, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up, so I'm going to hit this old outro button here, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zendead,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at SeizeTheGM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zendead@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.